Hey, 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 it's me, Rad Celebrity Hairstylist here, your host of the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast, a platform that allows the voices of the beauty industry to empower with the spoken word. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Over 100 episodes and currently over 60,000 thanks to you, and on over 40 plus podcast platforms, including Amazon Music, Audible, and Spotify. So I'm going to introduce our next guest coming. So Alex Yarber, 30, who loves and has so much passion for fashion and creating those beautiful looks that inspire us. He has been drawn to work in the fashion since he was a little boy wearing his mama's heels around the house, trying to steal her Vogue out of her beauty room. Alex dreamed of being the person to create those beautiful images we see in magazines. Being an artist was in his blood. Alex never imagined he could go from cutting scene to haircuts in high school to a six-figure artist. Alex grew in the Gulf Shores area where he developed his talent in photography. He was obsessed with portraiture, which led him to pursue a degree in fine arts. In Alex's small town, only photography was making the kind of money he wanted was wedding photography. And that just wasn't his gig. So Alex decided to go to school for cosmetology. It was at the Aveda Institute in Birmingham that he discovered his talent and calling to do hair. He started getting involved with social and saw an amazing opportunity to build an online portfolio that would attract clients and brands to work with him. Alex dedicated photo time for every client, and in that practice, he saw a way to also incorporate his love for beautiful images. So now we're going to fast forward to 6 years. Alex likes to think, I've done a lot. He likes to credit much of his success to putting himself out there and chasing every opportunity. 3 years ago, Alex opened his own salon with hopes of bringing a safe place to his town where people all walks of life in a small-minded conservative town. Little did Alex know, he'd be fighting a pandemic. Even though Alex was scared his business would fail, he fought to see it through. Since Alex started doing hair, he has been nominated for the Behind the Chair One Shot Award, been a product tester and educator for an international brand, hired on as an influencer for an amazing new company, worked with counselors, photo shoots, as well as shows like New York Fashion, The Blondes, Legends, Alex Wayne, Joshua Kane, and many more. This is only the beginning. Alex wants to use his talents to make people look like superstars so everyone can feel like a celebrity. Our guest today is not only a pioneer, he's a visionary, an inventor, a catalyst for change. His work has touched the lives of countless individuals, shaping industries and pushing the boundaries of what's possible. So get ready, hang on to the edge of your seats, folks, because in just a few moments, we're about to dive into the heart and soul of today's extraordinary guest. His insights, experiences, and wisdom are about to take you on an unforgettable ride. So let's welcome today's guest, Alex Yarber, to the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast. Well, welcome, Alex.
Thank you so your much
list
for having me.
Your list is so long, and you're yet still young or old, whatever you want to call it. But you've done so much. So I want to say first, welcome. And if you want to, you know, so early in your career, you've been offered so many amazing opportunities. Can you please introduce yourself and give the listeners a brief overview of your experience in the fashion industry, particularly relating to Fashion Week?
Yeah, absolutely. So I really got into Fashion Week almost like kind of by chance. I'm just like putting myself out there. I came across a boot camp, a fashion show boot camp by the New York Makeup Academy. And I was like, you know, this sounds like something I need to do. So me and one of my closest stylists that works for me packed our bags. We went to New York City and we got trained by the New York Makeup Academy to work backstage and, you know how to do Fashion Week. We've done Fashion Weeks locally They're very small, not near toward like to the scale. I'd say it was a very good like starting point of getting our feet wet and experiencing what a fashion week could be like, because it's still very similar. Like with fashion, you know, there's that chaos and you know, you have your leads and where we need to follow direction and like that team aspect. So like I really felt like I got the foundation here. Sadly, we don't have the fashion community here in Alabama that, you know, New York City has. So we don't really even have much of a fashion week anymore. We used to have a really awesome one, and now it's just very small. And unfortunately, I just don't get to work with it much. So yeah, getting to go to New York City, that was kind of a dream of mine. Of like, you know, I feel like that was kind of like one of those levels in your career that you want to get to. Of like, hey, I'm working at Fashion Week. That means that I'm a great stylist, right? Like I know what I'm doing. So, that was just a really great opportunity for us to go and learn from people who do it every day. And we, you know, the fashion community is so small, so it's all about making connections. So we made connections with the New York Makeup Academy. They fell in love with us as artists, and now they ask us to come back and work with them and help their new students and help their shows run smoothly. And from that connection, I've been able to meet the hair teams and the other designers working through all these other shows, and I'm constantly like, hey, here's my card. You know, if y'all need extra somebody on your team, I can do everything. So it's literally just me putting myself out there, and that's just kind of what I've done from day one to get to where I am today.
Exactly. And as I say, being from a small town and then walking the streets, I was actually just in New York a couple of days ago. So when you're
Oh,
walking
sweet.
up and down the streets, you're seeing all the stuff, you're seeing all the studios, you're seeing all the, and like, I feel at home here.
Yes. I
But
will
it's
say
great.
the first time was overwhelming. Like
Really?
from coming
Oh.
from Tuscaloosa to New York City, I didn't eat the first 3 days. I
Oh,
was
wow.
so anxiety ridden. I'd never flown on an airplane before. I had never ridden in a taxi cab. Like all these first things for me were getting done in New York City, and I was overwhelmed to say the least. So, but now I feel like I'm a New Yorker. Like I've been to New York so many times that I feel like it's home.
Yeah, you go and you see it, and there's always that like excitement around it and all that kind of stuff. So with Fashion Week, it's always like highly anticipated event in the fashion industry. Could you explain why fashion weeks are so important for designers, brands, and the industry as a whole?
Absolutely. Fashion Week is so important because it's really a time to inspire people. All the buyers are coming to Fashion Week to see what's coming out for the next season so they can buy for their collections or their clients. So it's really the perfect time to show what hair and makeup looks are going to be trending next season. You know, what the look is, what the vibe is for next season. It's all kind of setting up the plate for how the world is going to dress and look. So I think it's super important. You know, if anybody wants to make like I feel like a really great name for themselves or really want to start a trend, like that's the place to do it.
Exactly. And there's always the stuff like you were saying earlier about the chaos and everything else. So with
Yeah.
backstage, because I've done years of shows and things, and it's incredible some of the clothes changes, like it's very quick, but many people kind of see the glamorous runway show. So they see the front part, but can you
Yeah.
give us a glimpse into what happens like behind the scene during Fashion Week? Like, what are
Yeah.
some of the logistical challenges that need to be managed?
There's so many. It really depends on what fashion week you're at. But New York City, for instance, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. First off, everybody thinks that it's super glamorous. Like even models, before they get in the industry, they're like, oh, they see like America's Next Top Model and they see like all this fancy stuff. It's not like that. It is glamorous. It's not glamorous. We're worked like, you know, work horses back there. It's sweaty, it's hot, it's small, it's dark. It's not the ideal typically situation. Like I could only probably count a handful of times where I've been on a set that had everything we needed. Like so, especially in New York City, they're booking really cool venues, and a lot of these buildings are old, really old, don't have AC. In September in New York, it's still pretty warm, you know. So shoot, I've lost many a pounds at Fashion Week just
Yeah.
sweating, working that entire week. And I'm sure I
Exactly.
just did this past season.
Yeah.
So
And that's not always, I guess,
it's.
depending on the person, that's not always a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's definitely better than my more sedentary lifestyle when I'm at home. So, but yeah, we typically don't have ideal situations when you're working Fashion Week, especially that, like, for example, we were doing hair. For whatever reason this past season, I've had to wash more models in a sink in a bathroom than I
Wow.
have in my entire career. I don't know
Okay.
what's going on. I think a lot of people were using gel this season. A
Okay.
lot of gel looks. So models were coming from different shows with like crazy hair, and we would have to wash them in the sink. So, like, that's something that's really not something you want to do at a fashion show.
Yeah,
At
and I
all.
guess most
So,
people, as I say, they see this glamorous part, they see the models running out, and same for the model. I mean, and I've done models, actors, whatever, but they sit in your chair and they think, they think once they sit in your chair, they've made it.
right,
which
exactly.
which just starting out, unless you already have a big name for yourself, and that's what they say. Like sometimes you have a coordinator, they'll say, these are the looks, or do you come like sometimes you'll come in and say, okay, you're designing. Or so with Fashion Week, do most companies provide product? Do you have to bring your own kit? What's supplied for you? So what do
You
people don't know
know,
about that kind of stuff?
it really depends on what brand you're working for. I've worked with, when you do makeup, for example, I would say like you typically have to bring most of your stuff. Like there's key essential things in your kit that you're always going to need, like and your hair and makeup kit. So like your brushes, like your blow dryer, your irons, like things that are yours that you're going to bring.
New
As
tools,
far as
yep.
Yeah, as far as products, like you never really know because somebody could be like sponsoring that show. I've worked for a makeup company that was getting sponsored by another makeup company. So maybe we'd only have out that makeup that they were providing for the show for photographs. And we've had to put our stuff under the table and work from under the table. So no photographs were taken, pictures of things that weren't actually getting used. So it just varies. I would typically say though, if a key artist has a look that's specific for like one certain kind of like it needs this color eyeshadow, typically they're going to bring enough for everybody so that it goes smoothly. Any right key artist is going to do something like that. So as far as product, typically it's kind of there for you, but you still need all your essential that you would need to do any kind of job.
Yeah, and I think as artists, we all have tools and things that we like to use that kind of enhance our creativity. And that's the thing with
Right.
using new products, it sometimes can be challenging just using something different. And you might find something too that a new company that sponsors that you absolutely love that you've never tried before.
Absolutely.
But through the process and inspiration, so designers often create collections specifically for Fashion Week. Can you talk about the creative process that goes into conceptualizing and designing a collection with a runway in mind?
Absolutely. I would say, typically the designer has like a vibe, a lot of times they'll pick their hair and makeup team according to that vibe that they're looking for, right? So really what we're doing as artists is helping the designer create their vision. So, it might be something a wet look, or it might be a high, fashion look, or you just never really know. So what ends up happening is the designer brings us kind of a mood board, and then we come back with them of like, okay, well, if this is what you're feeling, this is the hair, or this is the makeup that I think would fit that vibe. And we collaborate with each other to nail down what it's gonna be. And before, we nail anything in stone, we always do a key test. And
Yes.
that's when we get with the designer, we bring a model, and we do whatever we're going to do on those models that day. We test it out, see if we like it, make sure it's perfect. And then I go back home and I make notes for my team of, okay, the eyeshadow needed this. I mean, I am very specific because you have 20 people that you're trying to lead and you might not know them. There might be some language barriers, and you need to be very specific of like, this is what I use, this is what we did, so that everything is exactly the same. And as a key artist, it's never exactly the same, but you try to make it as
As
seamless as
close.
possible. And that is what, as a key, that's their job. They should be making sure, fixing little things to make everything cohesive.
And I think that's what it is too, paying attention to detail. And always as a lead, you have to, as I say, it's like a chef, you know, sending stuff out from the kitchen, from the other cooks, the same sort of thing. You want to make sure
Absolutely.
that it's like A++, that when they're going and those models are being photographed and it's going to be seen potentially internationally or whatever. And now with 4K cameras, everything is, you know, you see the pores on your skin. It's like right
That
up there. So any little, you know, unaligned hair, especially if you're doing a sleek look, the last thing you want is a hair boinging out or like things like that, unless you're doing a messy,
Absolutely.
unstructured, bohemian type, you know, or something
Yeah.
more wild, or a lot of, you know, more, I'm gonna say barbaric looks, but more,
Absolutely.
you know, like
You know, a
that sort
lot
of
of
thing.
people, you know, the general people don't understand that like things look different in the extreme lighting that we have on the runway. So we have to really take in consideration. I take my a light to my girls like on the lineup before they walk, and I'm powdering, I'm fixing, I might be putting body glitter
Better,
stuff on them last minute. So, you know, it's we very much fine-tune detail, checking things back to back. You know, it's kind of chaotic, but I love it because it's so much, it's fun. You know,
I know, doesn't it give you like the rush and the excitement? Like
yeah,
for me, I like it. I like
I'm
that
obsessed with
pressure. I
it.
like because
Me too.
what happens with me, because I do a lot of shows backstage, but the thing is, I find when you don't have the time, then you don't have the time to think and you just do. And I find
Yeah.
that's when the best creative work comes out, because you're not overthinking it. You just got to do it
Yeah.
and get
I
it
feel
done
like
and
I
get them
work
out.
best with like a little pressure, you know. I'm already a procrastinator. So like when I have a little bit of pressure on me, I'm like I spit out my best stuff because I feel like I can't overthink it, you know.
Exactly. And also you don't have the time, and you don't want the whip later by saying, hey, you know, and obviously you want to be called back again, things like that. But we're
Absolutely.
kind of going to go into like trends and influences. So Fashion Week often sets the tone for upcoming trends. So what are
Yeah.
some trends or influences you have observed emerging during recent fashion weeks? And how do these trends make their way from the runway to everyday fashion? So some of the looks that you've done for runway, how does that kind of make it into, like, say somebody saw a video, saw a picture of what you've done, how can they incorporate? Because you know, when we do runway, it's always a little bit more extreme than what you would normally
Absolutely.
wear for every day.
Absolutely. You know, I think for myself, I always get really inspired at Fashion Week. So when I come home, I'm like trying to do this stuff with my clients. Like they probably don't even want it. And I'm like, look, I just did this. It was really cool. Trust me. Like you're gonna look hot. And so here we have a lot of events and stuff. So it's been a really great opportunity for me to kind of do some more of those event style looks. I would say this season, you know, sometimes it just varies. Like you never really know. Some designers want the show to be more about the clothes and it's not really about the hair. So I say that like some shows just have typical fashion looks, you know, clean skin, pushed back hair. I would say what I'm seeing a lot of that's kind of a staple and is probably going to continue to be a trend for the next few years is the wet hair look. Like it's super, super in style. It's sleek. There's so many different ways you can wear it and make it edgy. You know, I've seen people sleek it back and make you look professional. I've seen people wear, you know, your bangs glued to your face and it look crazy edgy and just really cool. So I'm really feeling these like very wet and like 2000s vibes, like all the 2000 vibes are coming back. The blowed out hair, the big updos, the ponytails, like ponytails are super, super on trend right now. So I really am seeing a lot of this, the things that we used to do kind of come back and be something that we're like really revisiting, which is really interesting because I remember like when I started my career, it was like right after all the 2000s stuff had ended. And I was like, oh, I can't stand seeing these mullets. I can't stand seeing like this, you know, chunky highlights or this big hair. And now it's all back. And I'm super excited. And I found this like new love for it. So I'm really just seeing kind of like us going through our Y2K era, this wet, spacey, out there, grungy, like Matrix kind of look. Bob's coming in really, really big. I saw a lot of Bob's this season. So I really think we're just coming into that Y2K era of hair and fashion that I really missed.
Yeah, because I know a lot with forecasting. Usually it's a 20-year cycle. So it's normally you take, so if it's the year 2000, what was big is the 1980s. So they take that
Right.
80s inspiration. They don't recreate the 80s, but like you said, the mullets. So they'll have a mullet, but then they'll razor the heck out of it, or they'll do
Yeah.
something a little bit different, or add some textures, some tones, or things like that. And that's why. Because a lot of for the cycle, the people that were there the first time, it reinvents that look for them. And the people
Right.
that haven't experienced it yet, like you said, a lot of these strong, I mean, I don't think the bob will ever go out. It's one of those classic shapes that will
Absolutely.
always be around from Sassoon, that kind of is always there. But I kind of want to go a little bit into like diversity and inclusion, because obviously
Yeah.
too, with a lot of runway, they have certain types and that sort of thing. But in recent years, there's been a growing demand for diversity, inclusion in the
Absolutely.
fashion industry. So how has this movement impacted Fashion Week, and what steps are being taken to ensure representation on the runway? So are you seeing, as you're doing the models, are there different shapes, types, ethnicity, cultures? Or do they kind of keep it in a certain format? I guess it also depends on the designer and what their, you know, their look is that they're putting out. But do you see more diverse and more inclusion on the runway?
Well, let me tell you something, Brad. We have definitely come a long way since the Naomi Campbell days, where she was the only black girl on the runway. I will say there's a lot of diversity now. You see a lot of queer people, a lot of trans, a lot of colors. I will say, like, shape-wise, I mean, I still kind of feel like we're a little. I haven't really fast-tracked that too much, you know? I will say I am super, as far as like New York Fashion Week, no, it's kind of typical slim, thin models. They all have like a look. But as you know, it is diverse as far as, you know, race and orientation and things like that. Like, it's so honestly heartwarming to be able to see queer people or men just like wear a dress on the runway. Like, the power that I feel like that takes on, like, it's so like 80s rock and roll for me. So like I kind of love that gender bending. Like, I think it's so edgy and really cool. So it's so interesting that we're like playing on those roles in fashion, and it's kind of like, it's very eye-catching, you know, because you just don't see it, right? So I love that we're inspiring people to dress like that, and that's, you know, to say that's okay and that's normal, and we're like putting that image out there. It's super important to me. I will say, as far as like super inclusive, Miami Swim Week, I was so impressed by Miami Swim Week. I saw all shapes, all sizes. Now, you know, every designer has a look and probably a client, you know, that they design for. But as far as like a whole, I saw the most diversity out of that, which is swimsuits, which is like, you would think, you know, no, they're gonna have like Sports Illustrated type of models. And no, they have all shapes, all sizes, all colors. You know, they even had like people who had disabilities. Like, I thought it was really beautiful that they showcased all walks of life. So that was really interesting. But you know, I still would say, as far as where we are today, as opposed to maybe 10 years ago, we have come a long way. You know, we were constantly working on, you know, natural and textured hair. It's not just your average white girl, you know, the same look. It is very diverse. So, you know, do we have a little ways to go? Yeah, we still have some work to do, you know, to make it better. But I would like to say that it's come a long way.
Yeah, but it's nice to see like change is coming. At least the door is opening, that people are getting their foot in. As I say, like, I think for most people, regardless of your shape, your size, whatever, they really want a role model that they can, that person is like me. Not everybody's a size
Absolutely.
two, not everybody's a zero. You know what I mean? So that person that's maybe a 14, 12, 14, 16, 18, 24, even, that they want to go. And there are some full figure models out there that
absolutely
that are really doing well. You know,
yeah, Ella Halikas, so, she's a plus size model that we've worked yeah. with, and she's killing it. And honestly, she gives me inspiration. Like, she makes me feel better about my body because she's out there just like having that self-confidence. So, you know, yeah, it's amazing to see these people and these new models and these new influencers come out and, you know, radiate and be the person they
yeah.
were meant to be.
And that's what I think it really is, because as I say, with this show, it's all about change, creating change, finding pioneers, people that are making a difference, because we need people that are going to challenge the narrative, that are going to say, hey, let's do something different. Hey, because like before, there's some designers that like very androgynous, very kind of type of looks, you know, when you're there and what they're showing. And as I say, like, it's a mind bending, you can't tell, but they like to keep people guessing. Or why not challenge the narrative? Why not say that, you know, we're people and we can come into our authentic selves and just represent and radiate, as opposed to just being, you know, somebody in the background on the sidelines.
Right.
Because, and, yeah. and that happens all around the world. So with global impact, so Fashion Week takes place in various major cities around the world. How do these events contribute to global fashion landscape, like influence fashion scenes in different regions? So say you were doing Fashion Week in New York, then you're doing Swim Week, and then you're doing a show maybe in your hometown. How are they kind of different?
Well, I would say it's really kind of the look. Miami to New York, they have completely like different looks. New York's more like business casual. Like, you're not gonna go to New York and like show as much skin as you would in Miami. Mm. And your makeup and your hair is not gonna be as loud as it would in Miami. In Miami, they want like colorful makeup, heavier makeup, bigger hair, louder outfits. I feel like, you know, New York City, however, like fashion capital, anything kind of goes, still yeah. a little bit more calmed down as opposed to everyday lifestyle. Nothing like Paris. Like, I thought Paris was going to be like crazy. Everybody, no, oh. like neutrals, plain, black, tan, white. No, New York City, yeah. you have everything. But I would say, like, you know, if I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to dress kind of like I am today in a little button down, you know, something cute as yeah. far as like Miami. I might have a short on and, you know, mm-hmm. just something much less than what I would do for New York.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you know, from back home, you know, it's much more chill here. A lot of people are just wearing like leisure wear and, you know, jeans and a t-shirt. Yeah. So, you know, or no makeup at all. People just kind of, they don't have the same kind of, honestly, like fashion sense is like people mm-hmm. in New York do, or Miami, like they don't care as much. So we don't have to do as much here as we would in New York.
Yeah. Miami. Yeah. So same with your clients. I imagine your salon, we'll get to your salon a little bit later, but they're coming in, they're probably not demanding the same looks as you do in, you know, as I say, California or like any of those places. They want to be comfortable. They want to be natural. They're not about, I'm going to put on, you know, my base and 12 layers and I'm ready for the, you know, my close-up sort of thing. But so with kind of technology, it's been changing the way we experience fashion events, because now they're putting in more like screens and video yeah. and with fashion, they've done that. So now, instead of the runway, a lot of designers all had like on video, and a lot of models were doing video. So how has technology such as like live streaming and social media transformed the reach and accessibility of like Fashion Week? So people before, if it was like a closed event, you couldn't get in, but now being more accessible, how do you kind of think that's changed things with the live streaming and social media? So has that brought it more attention? People can get more involved as part of like feeling they're part of it, like watching yeah. it on.
You know, I feel like with anything, there's the good and then there's the bad, right? Mm-hmm. So the good part is like, you know, we are getting that new exposure. Everybody's getting to, like, it's cool, you know, it's mysterious. What's going on? What's happening? You know, like the, you know, this is like something like the elite go to, like, this is like the uppity uppity, right? So it's really cool for people to see behind the scenes stuff because it's really expensive to attend these shows. It's really expensive to travel and do all this. So it's really inspirational for people. It's really, you know, just kind of mind boggling the things that happen because they never experienced this stuff in their entire life. But on the other hand, you know, social has also kind of, in my opinion, messed things up. And I say that because we used to have models and now we have models and influencers.
Yes.
And working with a model and working with an influencer are two different demons. Let me tell you what, because these influencers are divas. They are divas. And like, I just, you know, the designer should be the diva of the show, right? And so it's hard to work with influencers. It really is. I've had them be just straight rude to me. I mean, everything has happened with influencers. They come in super entitled and the designer wants to please them and they want to do everything. And it can be a lot. Like, you know, most models, they're going to come in, sit in their chair. They don't care what makeup or hair they get.
Nope.
This is their job. You know,
exactly.
Like their job is to get whatever we do and walk that design down the runway and sell it. And influencers are just more concerned about how they look. And it's not about them, you know? They're there to bring more press to the show or, you know, and to have people talking about it a little bit more. But in my opinion, like, I kind of wish they would just leave that to the models. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And they also come in with their egos. I mean, when I used to do a lot of stage work, people be rude. I would just walk. And then they would settle down to say, like, I'm here to design what we've done. And you can't just come in and just because they're doing it, how is it going to look in my selfie? How is it going to look?
Right.
Do you think you should be doing it that way? Well, we already have. You have somebody above you that says these are the looks, or this is what we've designed.
Exactly.
and it's to say like it because they're not professionals and models know they're not there to talk. They're not there to speak up. They're there to do their job. Same with us. We're there not to. Once the discussions have all been done, we're there to go. Get our job done, get that model out there, change them if we need to, and that's it. You know,
and like we discussed earlier, you know, we already tested the look, we already know what we're doing, so it's it sucks. And as an artist, to just, you know, we're already stressed out backstage. We have 10 other models behind you. To have somebody nitpicking you or just being like, you know, one model literally screamed at me for trying to take her makeup off because the makeup wasn't anything like what that was going down the runway. So, you know, stuff like that, it really, you know, you have to have some thick skin to work in this industry because, I mean, you just have to, it has to be water off a duck's back. You can't let things affect you because personalities and energies are just on 10. Everybody's trying to make a beautiful show. They're stressed out because they have poured all kinds of money into this thing. And you just have to take a step back and be like, okay, it's not me. Like, I'm still a great artist. They just are, you know, they're just doing their thing. This is them. This is, you know, it has nothing to do with me.
Exactly.
Which is really, really tough.
It is when you're new and starting and you're thrown into it, because most people would crumble after the first person says they
most
don't like
do.
Something because, and that's why, because they think, oh, it must be me. I'm doing it wrong. But no, it's like you said, you have to have a thick skin. Yeah. I did years of runway. And the thing is, you're creating illusions. So those models are an illusion of the vision. They're not that person walking out on the runway. It's whatever the vision is. You know what I mean? It's like Victoria's Secret. They don't walk around with wings everywhere down the sidewalk or, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, for these influencers, I think that, you know, maybe they should kind of do some research of what the brand is. Because typically the brand's not going to come in with a, Like if they've been edgy, they're always going to be edgy. They're not going to
Mm-hmm.
like just switch to like a clean preppy look, like
Yes.
just because you're walking the show. So, you know, maybe do some research into the brand. If it's an edgy brand and you don't think your look matches with their look, maybe not even entertain that. But, you know,
Yep.
it's all about the money these days and, you know, who can do what or what this show or something might bring to their career. So, it's just, it's a challenging, you know, just thing you have to work with and deal with and get over.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Cause if they came in without the attitude, you know, maybe a little humility or whatever and saying this brand is paying me, I should do the best I can, that maybe they'll want me back. Or because a lot of times, like a lot of brands wouldn't look with you, look at you unless you had a certain amount of followers. But then we found out a lot of influencers were just buying their followers. So if you have 10,000 or more followers, you post a put and you get 3 likes and no comments, you can generally tell, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
That some of these, something isn't right here sort of thing. But you also get a lot of kind of emerging. So you must have a lot of new, like emerging designers. So Fashion Week often provides a platform for emerging designers to showcase their work. What advice do you have for up and coming designers who dream of presenting their collections like during a Fashion Week? So if I was a new designer and I wanted to get into a Fashion Week, how do you think I might go about that?
Well, there's many different organizations and like little companies that you can kind of start with, you know. Like, for example, one that comes to mind is High Tech Moda. I know they take emerging designers and models and artists of all kinds, and they put them on platforms in major cities to get their work out there. Yeah, yes, you have to pay to play. Like, that's a major thing in this industry. You're going to have to pay to play. But it's a way to get your designs out there. It's a way to, you know, be like, hey, I did this at New York Fashion Week. Now, is your audience going to probably be what you need it to be? I don't know. But, you know, there are definitely those platforms out there, especially in New York Fashion Week, of small little indie shows or, you know, producers putting things together to showcase up and coming designers. It's, you just have to do the research. You have to go out there and kind of look for it. But it's out there.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I don't think they realize they may be a rock star in the salon, but once you go to Fashion Week or you go to do any shows, it's a totally different story because, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. Like they can be great. They're booked, you know, 6 weeks out, whatever it is in the salon. Everybody loves them. They're making big money. And they're like, oh, well, I can just do Fashion Week. It's easy. It's just a ponytail.
Right.
It's just a whatever. You know what I mean? But
no.
There's so much more expectation because I have a good friend. I'll give a shout out, Monet Everett. She does a lot of celebrities. She just completed what is it called? Project Runway. So she did the hair for Project Runway, right? So they have some of her stuff on there, but it takes, and her and I are on the same page because she knows what it takes. And it's not easy to get the gigs, do the stuff, like all that kind of stuff. She just actually taught on my last cruise that I had, you know, so we become very close and the same. It's and doing all that stuff, but it's getting in there and getting the names, getting the brands, and also networking, connecting, knowing when to talk, when knowing not to talk. Because a lot of times as a celebrity artist, celebrity stylist, you come, you do your thing, you say nothing, you leave. Like you don't, some celebrities don't even want you to look at them. They don't even want you to talk to them. They don't. I know from years of movies and stuff. Yeah, because, and you can't fan over. The worst thing to do as an artist is gush over somebody and be like a fanboy or fangirl over somebody. And, oh, it's you. And it's like, they don't want that because you're also dealing, and some people don't know about the industry. You see all these strong, powerful people. But a lot of them, not all of them, but you kind of sometimes have to walk on eggshells around people.
Very much so.
And because they're creating, a lot of times they have their you know, people around them, they have their bodyguards, they have their stuff, but they're like kind of fragile people themselves. So they kind of keep themselves reclused and stuff like that. But let's kind of talk about the future of Fashion Week. So the fashion industry is always evolving. What are your predictions? And I think you kind of mentioned before, what are your predictions for future fashion weeks? So what do you think we're going to see in the future as far as looks or you know, or
I
what
really,
would you, or even what would you like to see in the future?
I really think we're going to see color. I feel like we're really see color coming back in a big way. And I really think that people are going to be playing on shapes. I'm seeing all these crazy kind of shapes kind of like coming out, which is very, really interesting and futuristic. I personally love anything that's like futuristic inspired or edgy, and I'm seeing a lot of that on the runway right now. And that's just making my heart happy. But I really see us playing on color and shape and just like bold accented pops of things. You know, it might be a streak of color or, you know, a super bold eye and very, you know, like statement pieced looks almost. But yeah, I'm definitely seeing that we're going to be doing like just focusing on shapes and color and, you know, I definitely the wet this it, that's going to stay in fashion for a while,
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
think.
because I think one of the definite looks are always the sleek, you know, tied back bun or ponytail, or I think it's one of those classics too for one way. It's always easier because most, if you're doing hair, they want it off the face. And like you said, it's
Absolutely.
not always the attention on the runway, because obviously if your hairstyle goes viral and they're trying to promote
Absolutely.
their clothing and you kind of take away, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a conflict. But sometimes you never
Yeah.
know, because there are some great hair artists
Right.
that did amazing things, and all of a sudden that look just took off and everybody wanted it, right?
You know,
Like how
it's,
many
I will
people with
say
hair?
too. Oh, sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but
Oh yeah,
I want to
go
say
ahead.
that like hair and makeup is so different on the runway. Like I will say working on both sides, hair doesn't get near as much attention as the makeup does. And as working on hair, like you really have to work on a team. So as an artist, I kind of like doing makeup more because I can do one person. Like you typically don't have two people working on one makeup look, but it is very common for two people to be working on one hair look. So you know, this past season I just worked side by side with a lot of people, so I really couldn't take credit for any one look. We worked together as a team. So as an artist, like I feel kind of weird in my portfolio, like, well, that's kind of my work. It's like me and her work, you know? So I think I kind of like makeup and fashion a little bit more because it's a little more showcased, you know, on the camera, especially because it's right there in front and center. And hair, I feel like kind of takes sometimes a back seat. I feel like some designers though, they want crazy hair and that might be the showcase, but I feel like it's like one or the other. Which one are we playing on? Is it going to be crazy hair, crazy makeup? But yeah, I think that hair's kind of slept on sometimes on the runway.
Yeah, of course. And as you say, well, for me, doing a lot of shows, things like that, I mean, you're creating that character, so it's part of that character. So they should all blend and be together. The one thought I had before is like Ariana Grande with her ponytail. How everybody want that, and it's slick back and it's tight and it's, you know, and then but as I say,
Absolutely.
like to wear that all the time, I don't know how she does it. 'Cause that's a lot of
Either.
tension on the hairline.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
you
I'm
know,
not
so and
sure who's doing her hair right now, but props to whatever they're doing because she
yeah.
still looks great.
Do you find it easier yourself to do a sleek, clean look or to do a crazy, wild look? What one do you think takes more effort to
Definitely
create?
the more wild look because typically a wild look, you're like, I can't do that by myself. Like, especially in the time, like hair takes way longer than makeup does. So, you know, if it's a wild look, there could really be a lot into it. We might have to probably get have a way earlier call time just to start things. So, I mean, in a perfect world, if it was a really cool look that was fast, then that might be something. But I tend to like have a more simple look if there's a lot of models. You know, it really just depends on the show, you know, and you have to take all that stuff into consideration when you're booking these events, you're working with these designers. How much time do we have? How many models do we have? Is and because I've been to shows where we bit off too much than we could chew, right? So we tried to do way bigger of a look than we had time, people for, and everything else, but we wanted to impress that designer so bad, and it ended up just biting us in the rear. Thankfully, they were still happy, but you know, that's something you have to think about. Like, are you going to have 30, 40 models? If that's the case, then you can't do a crazy look because you might only have 10, 15 minutes per model. So, you know, all that kind of plays into the show itself.
Well, yeah.
You know, so it just really depends. But I like to be extra myself. So in a perfect world, we could do huge, crazy looks and we'd have all the perfect time to do all that because that's interesting, right? But typically it's more like simplistic stuff, which is fine with me too.
Yeah, because you have to also look at those models, how many there are, how many changes do they have, how many, like if you're doing this big, crazy hair and all of a sudden now they got to come back and you have to change it, rework
it,
and you've got a ton of spray in there and you don't have time to brush it out without them screaming, you have to know how you can transfer, plus you have the heat of the lights, plus you have all that,
and that's a tough conversation too to have with production. You know, typically, like I was saying, we have all this set in stone, but sometimes you'll have a show like we did the Polish fashion show that was at the Polish consulate, and they had many Polish designers, and they had already come up with a look. Well, like we only had a room before the show started for like 3 hours. Once those 3 hours came, we had to pack our stuff up and basically be done. We could do touch-ups, you know, in the hallway and stuff like that, but we had to kind of be done. But then the design, like the last designer, the one, you know, that was closing the show, they're like the most important designer. They wanted to change the look and do something different. And we're like, okay, but like where? Like where are we going to do this? What like, and first off, like these shows are back to back to back. So like we don't, like we'll need some time. We'll need like at least 20 minutes, like, and a lot more people. Like this, you're being unrealistic of what's going on here. So sometimes it's really hard to work with these big personalities and be like, okay, so we know that this is your show. However, let's be real for a second. Let's have a real conversation. And that can be really tough. It's really challenging with some of these people because they have everything invested in it, and you don't want to let them down, and you want to do a good job. But sometimes they're just not thinking realistically, you know. So it's really hard to bring those big personalities and kind of check them a little bit and be like, okay, but no, really, this is what we. And that's why, you know, typically if you're like really producing a show, like you have contracts, right?
Yes.
And you have things set in stone before you go do all this stuff. So they can't be like, oh, well, I'm mad because, or I don't want to pay you because at the end of the show, you didn't do the look that I asked you to do. No, 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 no. We agreed to this.
Exactly.
Eight other designers in front of you that had to wear the same look. We can't, you know, so those are all things that you have to really be prepared for.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is being your authentic self, but also being able to set boundaries, because I think us as artists, we're so used to saying yes to every request, regardless, even from clients behind the chair, all that kind of stuff, that whatever people want, we tend to do, you know, even if we don't have the time. Like I used to have clients, they would book a bang trim, but they really wanted full highlights and a thing. they just want, because I was always booked 6 weeks
out.
Like,
they could, let me see if I can work it in.
they can never get in, but most stylists will say yes, right? They'll just say, yeah, it's all work it in and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I used to do it. And then I got to a point where, no, it's like, if you didn't have it booked and you want to, and they're like, oh, I talked to so-and-so. And it's like, no. You can't, and they're like, no, I made that appointment, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I know, because I'm the one that answered the phone. But no, but that's the big things. But you must have some, like, you know, highlights. So could you share some of your personal highlights or memorable moments from your experiences during the fashion weeks?
Yeah.
You probably have a ton.
I do. The last season was probably my biggest season yet, and was super, I don't know, a big highlight in my career, because I got to be the key makeup artist for Bronx and Bonco, which was the first show that opened up New York Fashion Week, was official show. So that was my first official show that I keyed as an artist. So that was humongous for me. Natalie DeBonco, she's amazing, but she can be very hard to work for. And she wasn't upset. She liked everything. Like she is one of those people that might only say two words to you and or barely look at you, you know, because she's such a big celebrity. But like everything went smoothly. Everything went good. My producer was happy. And so that was like amazing. I couldn't have asked for anything better. The look wasn't like, it was simple. It was pretty, you know, everything just went smoothly. So that was super, that was a huge highlight for me, because I feel like I had a very good, successful, big show. And then I had a bunch of other highlights just this season. You know, I feel like it's, for me, I'm super excited when people just ask me to come work with them. You know, I'm just a small guy from Alabama. I don't live in New York City, even though I'd love to.
Just to know
that people in New York and all these these people that are doing these hair and makeup teams have me in the back of their head of like, well, you know, I can call Alex. He'll be on our team. He's talented. He knows what he's doing. And that's just keeps opening up doors for me. So that's a really big highlight that there's people that know me, that remember me, and they call me every season. This is my fourth New York Fashion Week. And it's just blowing my mind that, you know, people remember me my fourth season and they want me to work with them. So, you know, no, I don't get paid a lot, you know, or at all sometimes. You know, I donate my time a lot of the time. But it, for me, it's really important because I'm getting to make those connections. I'm getting to, you know, build my portfolio because you have all these amazing photographers and videographers making all this content behind the scenes. And I might get a really cool picture of myself even, you know. So for me, it's worth it. I'm always taking something home. You know, every I've worked with all these elite people and I never leave a fashion show not learning something. You know, even doing hair for and makeup for, you know, almost a decade. Like, I always take home something from Fashion Week. So, you know, that's really, that's enough for me, you know?
And that also makes you a much better artist too, because a lot of people, I think, go in with the wrong intention. You know, as they say, they're like, I'm going to be here. I'm going to make a ton of money. I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be, I mean, yes, all that happens, but you also have to pay your dues. Cause for me, when I first started, I used to do a lot of runway for bridal shows. Even bridal is not my thing, but you know what I mean? You kind of do that. Or I started as a makeup artist and then I went into hair. So getting into like that kind of stuff, but you do like people now, they just want to be like Insta famous and get in there or say like influencers and things like that. But you really have to do the work, but you must have made an incredible impression on those people for them to have you back, especially so early in your career. Like a decade isn't early, but for some that are like veterans that have been doing it for 50, 60 years, you're young. But to have those opportunities come to you, but to be able to kind of rise above, take all the stuff you have to take, because it's not easy working with models, working with actors, working with designers, working with, you know what I mean? You have to have a thick skin, like you said. But it also makes you a better artist that now they want you back again, again, again. And of course, next time your name is going to come up because they know who you are and they love your work. So eventually you'll get featured. That kind of all comes. So I just want to, so as advice for like fashion enthusiasts, like so many listeners might be fashion enthusiasts or aspiring industry professionals, what advice would you give them to make the most out of Fashion Weeks, whether they're attending in person or following online?
So if you're a stylist and you're going to Fashion Week, you need to keep in mind that this is a networking event for you, right? So I would, you need to be memorable. For me, I always make sure my outfits are on point. I have a look, right? I have my tattoos. I have my hair. Like, people know me. I'm identifiable. I have a thing, right? So I feel like it's really important as a stylist or somebody that works in hair and makeup to have a look. You know, I think sometimes as artists, we can get very, like, the job is hard, right? So, like, we want to wear athletic gear or be, like, real chill. But if you want to be remembered and you want to make an impression, you have to make an impression, right? So like you need an outfit, you need a look, you need to have something, because that is what's, you know, people are going to be like, oh my God, yeah, that dude with the tattoos, right? So like you need something to brand yourself. You need business cards. I have really cute little business cards with my headshot on them that say what I do and has a QR code to everything I do on the back, right? I give those out to people I work with, to the models. And that's another thing, the models, anybody that's like when you're in the salon, you know, like you're like, oh my gosh, you know, you're amazing. Let me follow you on social. I do the same thing with my models. I treat them like they're my clients in the salon. And I'm like, you know, I introduce myself. We chit chat a little bit if we have the time. Now, granted, some shows are so crazy that it's just not going to happen for you. But, you know, network with the models. You never know where a model's career might go. They might turn into a superstar. They might not come back next season. You just really don't know. But those models might – I have models call me up all the time, and they might go do something red carpet and need a quick glam or something, you know, when they're at Fashion Week. Or now some of our model supermodel friends, they've become friends.
Yes. You
know, they call us and ask us to go to dinner. So it's really cool that you just never know who might be in your chair. I did Kiki Barth at Miami Swim Week. Didn't even know – they were filming Miami, the Housewives of Miami. So you just never really know. So you just got to have an image. You got to have a brand, because you never know what kind of situation you might walk into, because this is a networking event. You know, and being professional the entire time, it does suck. You know, sometimes you want to cry. If you need to cry, you need to excuse yourself.
Go to the restroom, get out, get some air. Yeah.
There's definitely been times where I've had to do that, you know, but it's all about, you know, unfortunately, appearances and keeping up with, you know, what's going on. One thing that you really can do too, to be called back and to be remembered, is be stuck up your key's butt, honestly. Help them do anything. You know, if a key at a show, especially if I don't know them or if I really do know them, I'm like cleaning their brushes if I don't have anything to do. I'm cleaning their workspace because I know they're way busier than me. Or I'm helping my teammates around me. I'm being a true teammate. And people remember that. You might not even be a good artist, and they'll call you back just because you're going to help the show run smoothly. Because that's what it's all about. It's not about you. At the end of the day, it's not about you. It's not about your work. It's about a body of work as a whole, right? So you have to kind of take a step back and know, if you want to be in this, that it's going to take some time, and that you're going to have to humble yourself a little bit and maybe do some things that you're not really wanting to do, but it's going to set you up to be a better artist and kind of get more opportunities and be asked to come back and do these things.
Exactly. So, and you hit on some great points about, you know, not missing the opportunity to create relationships, because you never know. Also being there, stepping up, you know, being humble, but going above and beyond, because you never know who's watching, and somebody's always watching. Yeah. So let's talk about editorial. What is it? What does it take? And how do you formulate an editorial look or collection?
So editorial is much like, it's very light. You know, when we do makeup, for example, I'm not doing super heavy foundation. You know, like we were talking about earlier, we got these 4K cameras. They pick up everything, right? So, you know, we're making sure the skin is looking really clean. Typically, we're just like taking away imperfections. Most of these models that are supermodels and are doing this as a career, they're perfect already most of the time, right? So, you know, it's typically just we're bringing in the vibes. You know, we're going to bring the eye look or the hair look that's going to match whatever mood that we're going to do. But typically, as far as skin, it's very clean, maybe one dramatic thing, or if nothing, it's just going to be, you know, things that are just going to emphasize your beauty, you know, bringing a little color to your lips, your cheeks, mascara, maybe some lash, you know, something minute. We don't do like crazy, super, you know, sculpted beat faces in editorial just because that shows up really cakey and stuff on camera. So it's very intentional, and, you know, whatever isn't really done on set is kind of done post-production to make things look really crisp. Hair, you know, it really, I feel like in editorial photographs is a lot more, it's like, it's a lot more of the piece, I guess. It probably is being thrown, or, you know, has some kind of motion or movement to it. And typically on set, that takes a couple of people to do, you know, it's not just the model flipping her hair. It could be two or three people fanning the model with fans, or someone holding braids at a weird angle. You just never really know. And then after in editing, they get those people out the photo and stuff. So there's a lot of crazy tricks that happen behind the scene to make the hair and makeup look way more than what it actually is. But I will say, like, typically for most editorials, like, it's going to be cleaner skin, and the hair is going to be the drama most of the time. I would say that, just with everything, there's lots of mood boards and tests going into before you just like jump into this editorial kind of thing. We've come together with an artist, or the artist has chosen you because you have a vibe and you have a look, and they want you to execute that. A really awesome designer is going to love you as an artist and love your style and want you to kind of play with it and have fun with it. And they'll either love it or tell you to scrap it and start all over again and do something else. And that's just a lot of what editorial is. And that's why I love it so much, because you're creating with other people. And then, when you're doing that, something amazing is bound to happen, right? So, it really is a collaborative piece of work.
Exactly. So when you're creating something new just yourself, where do you find your passion for creation? So if you want to like create a new idea, something different, where do you tap into? Do you look around in nature, you see different things, or it's just stuff that pops up in your head?
Honestly, I'm really inspired by like the past fashion trends and like putting modern twists on it, right? Like Y2K's coming in style, right? We're kind of getting rid of the 90s. We're moving out of that a little bit more into the 2000s. I'm super, super inspired of looking at those images of hair that we did in the 2000s and imagining what it would look like today, or how I could put my own spin on that. Or, it could be a bob, and I've seen people put little devil horns in the bob or something. It could be something as simple as that, but just create helping take something maybe old or that we used to do and making it, reinventing it, making it new, and making a character out of that is really fun for me and what I like to do when I do editorials.
Yeah, and that's a similar with music, with a lot of the stuff they do. They take some old sounds, reinvent them, or slow a song down, or make it something that's bright and cheery. They make it dark and moody,
Absolutely.
and you get a different feel, of it, sort of thing. So with we all kind of deal with adversity. What are some of your biggest challenges you've overcome, and what did it take to become victorious?
I had a lot of adversities, honestly. I grew up in Alabama. That's an adversity of itself. But as just as a gay guy in Alabama, I've struggled a long time just finding myself and feeling accepted, because I feel like that conversation about being gay when I was coming up wasn't being had, especially here in Alabama. It's a lot more open and accepting now than it was, say 10 years ago. So that was a big challenge for me, because I just didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. Everybody who's super conservative and super set in their ways of how they perceive things, and I just was not fitting the cookie cutter mold. And to be a guy in the hair industry, first off, and when I was struggling with my identity, everybody just sees a guy in the hair industry and they're like, oh, that's a gay guy, right? So I struggled mentally of I didn't want to be perceived as that, almost like being innerly homophobic because of the world I lived in, that I didn't want to be a hairdresser for the longest time because I was scared that people would just think, oh, well, he's just another gay guy, And I had to get over that of it's not the only thing that I am. Yes, I am gay, but it's not the only defining thing about me. I'm also, a great hairstylist, a great makeup artist, a great friend, a brother, a salon owner. I'm more things than just a gay guy. And I hate that I wasted so much time in my early years of, focusing on something as stupid as that. So that was my biggest adversity, was really just fitting in. And, honestly, I never did fit in. I didn't fit in anywhere. And that's why I had to create my own thing, my own vibe, my own place. And that's what I have here today. And that's what worked out better for me. And when I did that, I flourished. Yeah, things are still hard. I still face battles and adversity all the time. I get called the gay salon, or I get called, a lot of names and picked on here in town all the time still. And I just have a backbone, and I just, water off a duck's back, because, a lot of people are just jealous that I put myself out there and I go get things. So, I'm also like one of the only salon owners that's a male in town. So sometimes people can be intimidated by me just because I'm a guy. Some women just don't want a guy. Some women only want a guy. So I feel like it's kind of a challenge to also be a guy in the industry. Things aren't really made for guys. As far as like even the height of things, my back hurts, you guys, because it's not for anybody that's almost 6 foot. So, you know, those are, they're not as bad as what most people probably face, but those were my adversities and kind of the things that were struggles for me to get through. And honestly, just kind of one, another adversity was learning my area, learning my like clientele, understanding that like my area is seasonal because we're a college town, and what am I going to do? What, you know, to keep me full or keep me working in those times when we're in a slow season. So, you know, it's, and I think that's just kind of life is just, you know, everybody, we all have our own battles and it's all about how we handle them and we track through them and maybe we help the next person that is coming up behind us. So
and that's a big thing in the victorious and that's the thing to learn, that it's okay to not be you know, put in a box. It's okay to be, I'll say, quote unquote, the black sheep. It's okay to, because that actually propelled you to do more. How many other people in your town have achieved the same level as you? You know what I mean? Not that you're compared to anybody else
other than, you know, the other, there's only one other person, and that is one of my employees, Skylar Murray. She did, she worked with me and came with me and did all these things with me. And she's the only other person I know, maybe even in the state, that is doing some of the things that we're doing. So, and she's here at my salon, and I'm so proud to have, like, we're that niche here in Alabama. We're the fashion gals. We're the ones that are doing that here.
Yeah, and that's what you need. You need to be the strongest in your own. You don't need to compete with anybody else. But people, you know, coming to you should realize how fortunate and privileged they are that they'd be able to sit in your chair. You know what I mean? Like doing fashion week, working with celebrities,
like
doing that. But it really is, because what other people, you know, as I say, it's the whole point is to empower. And like you said, you want to make all your clients feel like a celebrity. The thing is, you can, because you've worked on celebrities.
Exactly.
That's the difference, right?
Exactly. So having exactly that, what they need.
Yeah. So do you have a mantra or like a personal words that you live by that carry you through life? Like, do you have a saying that you say to yourself, or do you have something like some kind of mantra or like something that, you know, just gets you through?
You know, I stole this mantra from Jinx Monsoon, but water always comes back.
Yeah.
You know, shake that's it definitely off, one shake of mine. Yeah. Just shake it off. I really, that's probably the only mantra that I'd kind of say to myself. Cause really that's the only kind of thing that I really face. You really face in our career the most is maybe someone not liking your work or maybe not even liking you as a person. Not everybody's going to like me. Not everybody has to like me. There's plenty of times that I still have clients that might just not like my vibe, my energy, my style, you know? Yeah. So just being able to step back and be like, okay, it's not personal, or, you know, and maybe it's personal to them, but for me to not to take it personal, it's just shampoo. That's my mantra. That I say that all the time. It's just shampoo. So, you know, it's just makeup. It's not that deep. We can wash it off. We can start over. As long as it's there, we got something to work with. So, that's my mantra. We're going to coin that. It's just
shampoo. Yeah. But the same, you can wash it off. That works with anything, you know, relationship, like there's a self-specific, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. So the same sort of thing, you're going to wash all that stuff. You're going to get rid of all that stuff. Cause most of us hold on to it. We absorb it. We carry it with us during our whole lives. But if we let go a lot of the stuff in the moment, not take it personally, I think it really makes a big difference. And that really kind of changes everything. I'd love to talk about how you got started. You do so many things, hair, makeup, extensions, hair replacements. Would you tell our audience a story about a transformation you did for a client that changed their life?
Absolutely. Here recently, I had a client, she was in a really bad accident. She had brain surgery, so they had to shave half of her head off.
Wow.
And she came to me, and she had hair like 26 inches of hair. I mean, like it was to her hips, right? And she's like, I want to have long hair, but you know, and she was telling me every time she looked in the mirror, she's like reminded of this accident. She just can't move forward because every time she looks, her hair is shaved over here. So she got out about like, I'd say an inch and a half, 2 inches of hair growth. And what we did is I cut off some of her other hair and I made K-tips out of it. And we K-tipped as much hair as we could on that other side to, to give the illusion of her having hair over here. And I mean, you would have thought she was a new girl afterwards. And I, that's why I really love those transformation kind of services, because when I see those people light up and they're happy and like a layer of just bad is off of them, you know, it's just amazing. It makes me feel so good about what I do. You know, I do like helping people. So that just makes me feel like a superstar, and that like my life and something that and my legacy has a meaning because I'm getting to help these people. So, you know, I get that a lot from a lot of the hair extension stuff that I do with maybe people who have finer hair, or the hair replacements for, you know, men when we're putting on hair systems. You know, they're the smile and the energy they have after, they're like, they're mind blown that they never thought they would have hair like that. And the confidence that gives people, or even doing their makeup and just like really beating their makeup so well that they look in the mirror and they're like, oh my God, I'm so beautiful. I've never looked like this. And they always say, well, you're going to have to come home with me because I'm never going to be able to do this. And I'm like, for the right price, I guess we can make that happen. But
Exactly.
But that's what it's all about. It's just making them feel good. So.
And you're an artist that you're empowering your clients by. So you as a magician, what you're doing is you're matching their outside to what they believe they are on the inside. And that person that said, I've never looked so beautiful, they always did look that beautiful. They just never saw it before or through the right eyes, right?
Yes. And I really try to build my people up when they're in the chair too, because a lot of people come in with this like self-loathing thing. Well, oh, I'm not pretty, I'm not this. And I'm like, no, girl, you're beautiful. You got beautiful hair. You got beautiful skin. You just need a little, like a little something to just, you know, emphasize what you got. You know, I always try to build up what they have and never be like, oh yeah, girl, this hair is dry. It needs this. Like, you know, you want to make them feel good about themselves. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be like, well, yeah, you got this dry skin. We need to put something on it to make, you know, you got to make them feel good. And that's what it's all about. And that when you make people feel good, like the good comes back to you, I feel like, you know,
of course,
when you put out that good energy and you just, you receive it back. So I just, that's what I try to do. That's all, like all I can do.
Yeah. And wording and dialogue makes a big difference. Like you say, the hair is dry. You know, I mean, you're not going to say, girl, where did you come from? The barn? Because your hair is like straw. You know, or somebody sitting in your chair, I don't know if Alex can do my hair, because all he does is see models all the time. I don't look like a model.
You know, I've actually had clients say things like that to me before. And honestly, that crushed me. So I try, especially here recently, because that was actually a pretty recent. I had an older client just be like, well, all I see are like models and like young girls on your page. I just like didn't think you would take me because I'm older. And I'm like, no, I'll take anybody that wants to sit in my chair. So, that kind of made me more aware of like, hey, maybe I need to make my content more diverse and like, so people can start seeing more of themselves and stuff too. So, you know, that's definitely something I even need to check in myself of being aware of, like people feel like that. People do feel like, oh, maybe because he posts all this that he won't work on me. And that's not the case at all. So, you know, it's very important, I feel like, for artists to, you know, show your clients that aren't the most model-like, let's say. You know, everybody needs to be represented because they want to feel comfortable, like they can sit in your chair too.
And I think for a lot of artists, that's a thing. And that's a reason why some people may not come to them, because they really don't know who they are, or they assume because they haven't done the research, right? Yeah. So most people like to talk or say stuff when they know, and a lot of haters probably have never met you or the person they're hating on, right? Usually it's jealousy. It's not really you personally. A lot of times it's jealousy, but, and that's what it is. Like if people saw you maybe in an ad, or you're featuring more diverse, different body shapes, and say, yes, I do all, you know, we can create the inner beauty for you, or we bring the inside out, or whatever it might be. And then people say, hey, yeah, maybe I'll try that guy. Because I know, like you, I was the only guy in school. I was the only guy in the town that I was in, other than like an older barber who had been doing hair for like forever. So it's the same. People come to you, one, because you're a guy, or they don't come to you because you're a guy. So I've experienced the same things as you. And a lot of female clients like to come to a male stylist because, and same guys going to a female, they believe that the opposite gender will enhance them, that they'll be attractive to other people, right? Definitely. So the same sort of thing. They think he's going to show me the way that what he likes. But two, it's our job to really bring the best out in them and who they are, and not create an illusion of somebody they're not, you know, sort of thing.
And I think the worst thing you can do to somebody is give them something that they can't do, you know, like where are their skills at? Like I can make your hair look beautiful all day long. Mm-hmm. I can cut it and do all kinds of crazy things. Yeah. But when you get home, like, are you able to do X, Y, Z? Like, am I going to give you something that's going to be worse? Like, are you, you know, if I gave you a bang, are you going to then hate yourself because you don't know how to style your bangs?
Exactly. And now you want to grow them out.
You know, so it's a lot of that you have to take into consideration too.
Oh, yeah. And so being a salon owner can be a scary step. What made you want to take the leap to be a salon owner?
Honestly, it kind of fell in my lap. I wasn't really looking to be a salon owner. The best situation kind of just popped into place. And I was looking for another salon home. I started booth renting just because I didn't like fit in other salons here. And I was kind of outgrew my booth. And so I was just looking around. My mom, she had helped me find this place. She knew somebody who knew somebody. I was trying to get rid of the place, and it all just fell into place and was. So, you know, I think it was just kind of one of those things that meant to be. I didn't really, I would have, younger me would have been like, I want to be a salon owner, but I wasn't really like looking to do it. It kind of just called me, and here I am, and now we're doing it. I didn't go to business school. Every day is still a learning moment for me. I tell my stylist that all the time, that like, you know, they're learning, I'm learning, like I'm human. I make mistakes just like they make mistakes. So, you know, being a salon owner is an ever going battle. Like there's always stuff for me to do. I'm, you know, not only my own clientele, but I have a lot of behind the scenes things that need to be taken care of. And, you know, even just making sure that I have the right people in my place, and that the right, you know, everybody's happy, and that there's no like drama going on. You know, nobody's like talking about something. You know, it's hard to like juggle all these things, but at the end of the day, it just, it makes me a more rounded individual. And like it, I like being their leader because it makes me accountable. And I feel like, you know, I have people that look up to me, right? Like I have these stylists that, you know, I'm teaching and that want to have a legacy and want to do the things that I'm doing. So that just makes me work harder and fight harder for them and do more for them. So, you know, I wasn't really looking to be a salon owner, but here I am.
And you have a full team, a full service salon. It's not just you independent. And, you know, as you grow, they grow, because the more you know, the more you share. So they get the benefit of that, of your experience, of your, I mean, I own my first salon at 20, my second one at 22. So I had multiple salons from a very young age with a large staff. It's a lot. it's a lot. And to be doing shows and be doing, I brought my team when I did stage shows or did platform or did, so they could get the experience of that. I never forced them to be anything they didn't want to be. So if they didn't want to be competition stylists, they didn't have to be. If they didn't want to do photo shoots, they didn't have to. But there's so many more things that we have that people don't tap into. They think just being a stylist is being behind the chair every day, going home, coming back, doing the same thing. There's so much more to it. But as a brilliant rising star that many followers look up to, what advice would you give about transformation and the ability to persevere?
You know, really, you gotta just, sometimes you just have to like, it's tough in this industry. Sometimes you just have to stick with it and stick to your guns. You know, I would say like never turn down an opportunity, but sometimes you have to really weigh that opportunity and make sure that, you know, you're not just doing it just because like it's really going to benefit you in the end. You know, you want to make sure that you're giving your time and your energy. It's very valuable, and you want to make sure you're not only giving it to the people, the valuable clients that that energy is, you know, but to the people that you're working with, as far as, and even in the fashion industry, you know, just I wouldn't, you don't want to give too much of yourself to people that is not going to benefit you too, you know, like don't go work for someone on a fashion week and like they work you like a dog and then you know you don't even get pictures or something out of it, you know, like you need to make sure everything's also gonna help you too. And that's not, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think
No.
that's selfish. It just needs to serve you as well. So I think that was really important. And you know, it's also not always about you. Help the people around you. Be a real team. Things work better as a team. You know, sometimes even when I'm not doing anything in my salon, I'll go help a stylist blow dry. You know, I'm not too big and bad to help other people around me, and then that makes them want to help me when I need that help one day. You know, so you know, being there for other stylists, I feel like sometimes a lot of stylists like be jealous and are attacking other stylists and don't, you know, like that culture is weird there. I think it's really important for us to be a community and a team and work together. You know, there's enough hair out there in the world for us all to do and all to be busy. So, you know, I think that's some of the really important things of like just being able to make it through this career, because it's a hard one.
Exactly. And it has to be a win-win-win for everybody. So we've talked already so much about Fashion Week, about ownership, about editorial, about your life. Like it's just the time has gone so fast. But is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to share with our audience?
You know, I would just say that like if you're really interested in doing Fashion Week stuff, start reaching out to, you know, brands. Maybe some brands that I can list off that I know do Fashion Week stuff are like Redken, Unite, Kevin Murphy, Wella even. There's a ton of makeup brands, and if you really want to get out there, reach out to those people. You know, start making those connections. You might even find that a boot camp like I did, where you can pay to play. But just know that sometimes in this industry, you're also not going to make a ton of money, and you're going to have to pay to play a little bit. You might have to pay to work, you know, to make those connections and to get yourself out there. So it's not always glamorous. It's not always what you might see, you know, behind the scenes. So you gotta put yourself out there. You gotta go get it, make those connections. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. So we all have mentors and people we look up to. So we all learn. A lot of people look up to you, but who do you look up to? Would there be anyone you would like to give a shout out to?
Wow. I feel like I really look up to her Instagram is Mia Moore, MAI.MOR. She's a fantastic makeup artist, and she works at the New York Makeup Academy, and I have learned so much about makeup and just being an editorial artist. And I wouldn't be half of the artist I would be today if it wasn't for my tea. She's amazing. So if you're in New York City, go take a class with her. She is absolutely phenomenal. As far as, you know, hair people, I've learned a lot from the Cutler Salon team and the Kevin Murphy team. I really want to thank them for even just bringing me on last season. Jalen, I've learned so much from Jalen. He's an amazing stylist, huge celebrity hairstylist from LA. And I've just learned so much from him. So I look up to him a lot, the things that he does, and his husband even puts out. They're such an amazing team. So really just the artists that I work with all the time, like they're the ones that inspire me, and they're the ones that, you know, I want to be more like. But yeah, shout out to those people, because they're amazing.
And of course, you're going to shout out your mom and your salon team
Yeah, shout out my
and
mom
yourself.
who
Yay,
helped it all
me.
happen.
Thanks for letting me get into your beauty closet and grabbing those
Absolutely.
magazines, the Vogues, and things like that. I mean, obviously, there's so much
Thanks,
more to
Mom, for
talk. I
putting up with me, honestly, because I know I
really,
was
I'd love to have you
extra.
back on again. I've got some ideas, so we'll talk
Yeah.
online. Like that sort of thing. So, as we kind of wrap up, I want to say thank you for being on today's podcast. Alex. But as we kind of wrap up, you've given so much gold already, but what's a nugget of gold you would like to leave our audience with?
You know, just go out there, you guys, and make art. You know, my mantra is, you know, it's just shampoo. So, you know, don't, it's not that serious. Water off a duck's back. Like, you know, just be yourself, put that good energy, do that work, you know, it's going to pay off. So, yeah, you know, y'all can do it. And I believe in everybody, and y'all are going to be great editorial artists too.
Amazing. So where can people connect with you? So if they wanted to reach out, they want to connect with you, where can they find you on social?
Yeah, you can find me at Yarb Hair on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I'm literally everywhere. I love social media, so I'm always on there. Or you can also visit my portfolio website. You can send me a message on there. It's just alexyarber.com. You can see the work I'm doing right now, things that I've done in the past. It's just in my little portfolio. And if there's a little message or contact me forum on there, so if you ever want to reach out to ask any questions or anything I can help you with, let me know.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, it's been almost 90 minutes. So it's gone quick.
My bad.
But as I say, but I think people love when they can hear experiences, they can learn, they can take your wisdom today, apply it to their own lives, their own things, you know, that really wanted to get into Fashion Week. I know a lot of people have been highly anticipating this podcast coming out.
Yes.
They're all, the buzz is already there. They've already been talking about it because they know how an incredible artist and person you are. I've talked to you now. This is my second time chatting with you. But it's to say, like, everything's real, but you're very personable. I mean, if I lived a little bit closer, I would visit your salon. Who knows? I still might show up. We'll do it. We'll do a salon ambush.
Down.
We'll do a salon ambush. And
we'd love to have you,
Brad. Come in and do that sort of thing. But I want to say thank you, Alex, for joining us on today's
Thank you for having me.
Podcast. And then, so today's episode has been brought to you by Beauty Industry Cruises, Powerful Education, and Beautiful Destinations. So October is their Caribbean. So it's all based on Halloween. It's October 27th to November 1st. There's a Fright Night. There's all kinds of crazy stuff happening on Virgin Voyages. January, we're going to be doing Australia from January 27th to February 1st, 2024. And then June, we're going to be doing the Mediterranean. So these events are all announced at www.beautyindustrycruises.com. You can also follow at Beauty Industry Cruises on Instagram. And also you can follow me on Instagram at Brad Celebrity Hairstylist. So remember to get up, dress up, show up wonderfully and powerfully. And I'll see you next time.